This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Welcome to Book Talk for Book Talk, a podcast where we deep dive into the writing of your favorite novels.
This season, we're exploring Sarah J. Maas's first installment in the Crescent City series. This is Jack.
And I'm Amy. This is part two of this week's episode.
The views expressed by the hosts are entirely their own and in no way represent the thoughts or intentions of the original author.
This podcast is a discussion shared to spark thought and conversation on the characters and themes of this novel.
The interpretations presented in this podcast are just a few of the many possibilities. Listeners are encouraged to read along and share their own analysis of the text.
Though the hosts speak mostly within the constraints of this book, series and extended universe spoilers may be discussed with or without warning.
Explicit language, as well as themes of sex, violence, abuse, depression, self-harm, and death will recur throughout this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. At one point, Micah goes, I'm going to say almost too hard on Bryce. And that's saying something since he tries to kill her.
Okay.
Quote, you were without ambition too. You never would have the drive to leave this job and thus never take off the amulet. Okay, sir. Not taking off jewelry ever. It's not symbolism for not having drive.
Yeah, it's true.
You know why I'm laughing.
Yeah.
Because I haven't taken off the earrings you gave me. I don't know how many years ago.
I mean, honestly, since I almost lost the necklace my mom gave me on my golden birthday, I don't take it off anymore.
Yeah. Where's... You're reaching, sir.
Yeah.
That's as it... Both of us. Yeah, I just didn't appreciate that.
So Micah is in this really deep, deep monologue about everything, explaining for us who may have not picked up the signs how he's behind everything. He's the mastermind. He's Machiavellian. And he's been leading Bryce and Hunt along. When he talks about the explosion at the White Raven, he's explaining that he'd planted bombs all around the city where he thought Hunt and Bryce might go while they were searching for the horn. Quote, when Athalar's phone location pinged at the club, I knew the gods were helping me along. And this just gives me a lot of ick because what we're seeing here in Micah is a trope that I think we can see in villains. And we can see in a lot of other different contexts, and that is that religious zeal that, like, yeah, just because things went my way must mean that I'm doing the right thing because the gods are with me.
Yeah.
And it, I don't like it at all.
Because it's all, I mean, like, it's just also chosen to interpret it.
Yeah.
It also, I'm bringing it into the real world now. Which is, like, a thing that you do see in the real world, but of, like, no, my evil actions are okay because I was chosen by God. It just kind of gives me, like, the royals, because, like, there's a lot of stuff happening with Kate Middleton discussion that
Nicole, our friend, and I, we've been talking a lot where it's just like the idea that you're saying, like, I'm in this position because I have been, my blood has been blessed by God. Because that's what the older rivals believed.
Right, right.
But just the whole zeal, like this, like, I am in this position because the gods approved of me. It's a trope, but like, I approve of this trope here.
Because
he also wants to become the Asteri.
Right, right, right. I'm not poo-pooing on SJM's.
No, you're not. I know you're not.
I'm just saying, yeah. I think the trope gives me the ick because it's so grounded in reality.
Yes, yeah.
In probably every war that's ever happened on Earth, someone started it because they're like, well, God's on my side. And it's just terrible. Stop using God as an excuse.
Stop using it. If what you're doing is to draw blood or any kind of pain, I promise you God's not on your side.
Yeah.
That's a guarantee. Yeah, it's just done his ambitions, because it's like, I also forgot why he does what he does.
He wants to be an Asteri.
He wants to be the seventh Asteri. He wants to be part of the boy band.
Yeah, he does.
He's like, me too, guys. I learned the dance moves. So it makes his religious zeals even better.
Yeah.
When Micah explains why he needed Bryce's help with the horn, quote, all my power couldn't find it, but you loved her, and the power of your love would bring the horn to me. And Amy, I love you, but let's not have faith in me to find the horn.
Yeah.
In that situation, I feel like
I would find the horn for you because of my love for you.
I'm going to make it hard now. I'm just saying,
it's not because of my love for you. It's because I can't let things, I can't lose.
No, I'm going to make you lose. The whole world's going to go down in hell now. No, but I feel like with us, we would either figure it out in the first 5 minutes or never.
Yeah, it's true. It's like, I read your mind or your mind went someplace I could never follow.
Do I need to replay the Taylor Swift episode? The legendary Taylor Swift episode?
I know. No.
I'm just remembering that moment where it's like, you're winning and you're like, why am I winning? But I feel like I'm losing.
Yeah.
You're so mad. It's so good. You guys should go listen. We should bring that back for this. Someone did ask that we do that made up game that we were making up on the spot
for
with
Crescent City. We should do it.
Maybe for our Patreon. So Danica really did look into Synth because she was looking out for Bryce. Granted, once she realized it was bad, she backed off. But what does that say about Danica and her belief in Bryce?
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that she didn't have confidence in her friend. Now, I want to make this extra point. Danica knew that Bryce was starborn.
Yep.
So you add that extra level of lack of confidence in her friend.
Yep.
I don't think it's disputed that the reason why Danica was like, even Fury said that Danica looked into it because she wanted you to be strong or worried about you wanting it or something.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There's a known factor of Danica saying, ah, my friend Bryce needs this. It just makes me question Danica more.
Yeah. I mean, It's hard. I think that's the ugliness of friendship when you're in your 20s.
Yeah.
You're capable of making bad assumptions.
And I think that's fair, because we also see how Danica did everything behind Bryce's back to protect her. And that's kind of like, we get an instant forgiveness with Danica.
Yeah.
Everyone but me. But like, we get this, like, the sense of, yeah, she didn't have faith in Bryce. She did all this stuff, but like, look at all the ways that she protected her friend. And that is sweet. Like, I will say yes, absolutely. But to me, it shows that Danica also thought Bryce was the party princess and couldn't take things seriously.
Right, right. And maybe that was true at a certain time.
But her mistakes helped cause her own death, too.
Right, absolutely. It could all have been solved if Danica had a serious conversation with Bryce and been like, hey, there's this thing on the street. I'm really worried about its impact and I really want to warn you against it. Can you, you know, can we talk about this? Can you, you know, whatever.
Something, just some kind of level of communication. And a thing that we all have to learn to, when, as we grow up, hopefully people figure that out in their 20s. Sometimes people don't figure that out at all.
Yeah.
Of like, hey, life would be easier if we just communicated. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be a big deal. But I think it's like a great example, now that I'm reflecting on this, of like a lesson that Bryce had to learn to in the most painful way possible.
Yeah.
That she didn't even have that option to talk to Danica. Mm-hmm. Danica was the one who withheld it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's hard. But I kind of want to look into this whole villain monologue. It is something that we see a lot of times in movies, a lot of times in books, where the villain finally has the heroine in the corner. Now I'm going to tell you all of my master plans. And if I ever become a villain, I will just like take them out immediately. I'm not here to explain myself.
Well, that's... I like when movies or books cut the villain monologue and just go like, no, you don't get your moment. I'm killing you now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it subverts what we expect, which is the villain mm-hmm. monologue.
But for here, it doesn't feel tacky for me.
Yeah. It's an interesting balance because so much has been hidden from us up until this point. Mm-hmm. We're dying for the truth. And we're happy to learn the truth that no longer implicates Danica in bad ways.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? It changes the narrative that we were told a few chapters ago.
Yeah. And it also is obvious that Bryce is prompting it along.
Yes.
For the fact of getting his confession on camera. So I think that also does a lot of work where it's not just a villain hearing himself talk for the sake of it.
Yeah.
It's Bryce kind of egging him along. I like to imagine a little bit more egging I would have liked mm-hmm. to see. It makes me think of like an episode of Sherlock. Remember that show?
God, I love that Sherlock. Show.
There's one episode where Sherlock like tries to get information out of a woman who just lost her husband. Mm-hmm. And he goes and says like facts that are clearly wrong. And he said like in a very affirmative way. And he was like, oh, people will want to argue with you immediately and give the truth.
Yeah.
That has nothing here to say to that, just that I think about it a lot and I thought about that here.
I do think maybe Bryce could have egged him on, but like you said, it does help for us to know Mike is on camera. So we want him to divulge the truth so that he is implicated.
Mm-hmm.
And Bryce wants him to divulge the truth so that he's implicated.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
It is a good balance. If there were no cameras right now, or if we weren't cognizant of the fact that there are people watching,
yeah,
I think we would feel like this is heavy-handed.
Agreed.
After Micah injects Bryce with synth, Bryce uses one of the books in the library to create a barrier around herself. And what does Micah do? He plays dirty and goes after Syrinx. Now, like I said earlier, we're seeing metaphors here, at least in my mind. First off, Micah knows that Bryce has a bleeding heart. He has been watching her for however long this has been going on. Is it a month? Is it 2 months? I don't even know. He knows Bryce is going to save whomever she can save. Look at what she tried to do for Hunt. She was willing to sell herself into slavery to mm-hmm. save Hunt. What better way to get Bryce to let down the barrier around herself than to attack Syrinx, who is literally a metaphor for Hunt?
Yep.
Quote, the chimera thrashed, biting at the archangel, who grabbed him by the scruff of his neck. Please, Bryce screamed. Again, she tried to move. Again, again, again. But Micah didn't even falter as he opened the door to the small stairs that led to the top of the Nox tank and threw Syrinx into the water. Honestly, it feels like a repeat of the scene at the Comitium where Bryce is begging mm-hmm. and Hunt is just being taken away.
Yep.
It's no different in my mind.
Yep.
We then move into chapter 78, and Micah leaves Syrinx to drown or be eaten in the Nox tank while he ravages Bryce's body with his magic. When he sends a blast of magic to the horn in Bryce's body, and it seems to do nothing, he decides, you know what, let me just cut it out of her.
That's a solution.
Not only have I ravaged her body with my power, not have I only shot her up with drugs, let me also mutilate her.
Right.
There's a reason why this whole thing is so intense. And the intensity only continues to increase. Syrinx is struggling. Bryce is feeling the effects of the synth. She's panicking. Mike's approaching with his knife. Like, it's a pretty... I actually really appreciate the action in this scene.
Yes.
And the adrenaline that's, like, coursing through my body at this point.
That's not adrenaline. That's synth.
That's synth. Okay,
got it. We've injected you too.
He injected me as well. Oh no.
Yeah.
I do have to ask though, why did it take me until this read, like my third, fourth read, to be like, oh, they're using the books to open them up because the books will cast spells to attack Micah. Because that makes sense.
Okay. So it does make sense in the, like, in the way that they are guarded to protect themselves.
Right. Yeah.
And that's what it's like. I'm just like imagining opening the book and the book's like,
Pikachu.
Pikachu. That is the book coming out. It's like, I opened a manga. I did not register that at all either. That they're protecting / attacking. But at the same time, we've seen these books be very sentient. Mm-hmm. So why wouldn't they want to attack him?
Right, right. No, I think the logic makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't think I processed it.
Neither did I.
It's like you saying you're going on your hot girl walk. And I'm like, you could have said it 10 times, but I only processed it once.
It is funny how much I did talk to you about it that day. That is what's...
I only processed it once. You it's nodded the same it. With these
you,
books.
You nodded.
That doesn't mean I was, like, processed.
I would hide the horn at the hot girl walk because you never remembered.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. That's, and I would fail. The world would burn. Yeah.
Are we bad readers or should we blame SJM on this? And I'm going to refuse to take accountability and just say it's SJM, even though she clearly wrote it and we just didn't remember.
I will admit to being a bad reader. I regularly like read too quickly when it comes to scenes like this where it's intense.
Because it's intense and you want to like get to it and be like, what's going to happen?
Yeah, I just want a happy ending. Just get me to the happy ending. So I will take the blame on this one, but I'm shocked at how terrible I was at retaining this information.
Same.
At this moment, we switch to Rune's perspective. And it breaks my heart that Rune... I just love how much Rune loves his sister.
I know.
Like, and it's really in this scene that really hits home for me.
Like, his eyes are glued. He's yelling to get the ox there right away.
Yeah, yeah. And then he's like, quote, Rune had not woken up this morning expecting to watch his sister die. Like, I don't need that dread. Mm-hmm. I already have enough synth in my body. Don't add more adrenaline to it.
We can't handle this. I love the symbolism of Micah being locked away in the bathroom, because if there's anything that unites us all, it is going to the bathroom. And like, there's even a book called Everyone Poops. And I want to say, because, you know, in past seasons and other books, we talk about watery bowels with Feyre being a very human thing. Now, we haven't had that link here, but I will come back to the fact that this is a link that you could argue is very human.
Yeah.
You know, that's needing a great point. To go to the bathroom. And so he is being forced in a place that is a common factor for him and the people that he hates.
Yeah.
And it's just such a funny place for him to been thrown into. And symbolically, I do like, and it, you know, and also you can say he's locked in there because he's a piece of shit himself.
Yeah. Great point.
You know,
I love it. I just applaud you.
Thank you.
Once Micah is locked away and Bryce's leg is healed from the synth, Bryce goes into the Nox tank to save Syrinx, who is limp and Lahaba thinks is dead. In the summit's conference room, Flynn comments, it's Bryce's ordeal.
You're right, that you got me. I was worried about your gasp.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. You did a great job.
I forgot to added it too soon. No, I apologize.
No.
Let me try again. Flynn comments, this is Bryce's ordeal. Was that better?
I'm going to keep it all in.
Oh, damn. Is the fact that this is Bryce's ordeal made lame because Flynn had to point it out? Or were we never going to remember that this is potentially an ordeal if Flynn hadn't made the comment?
I think what's lame is the concept of an ordeal.
I agree.
It's just a very half-thought-out idea.
Yeah.
And had it come through in the third book more or something of any kind of follow through, I would have been more on board with it.
Yeah.
But like, when you look into what an ordeal could be, right? It's something that every fae goes through. And it's not like we have an official sign either, right? Like, it's not like they glowed green. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Or they got their first batch of their powers. Because that would have been great for, like, right. if you go through your ordeal and then you get, like, your first wave of powers, but you don't get the rest until the drop. And then that would make Bryce a little bit more powerful here.
Yeah.
And the fact that ordeals are so different for each person.
Yeah.
Like, it could be an illness. It could be a bad breakup. Mm-hmm. Why is this moment Bryce's ordeal and not literally the entire book
now? Yeah. It's such guesswork.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense. And, like, to your point, if we saw Bryce think about it as her ordeal and how it changed her in book two, like, she thinks on it in the past.
Yeah.
At least then it had follow through and she recognized it for what it was.
And I need it to be, like, a thing that, like, that we visually see to know that it's an ordeal. Because why can't this be, like, I came here to your place, Amy, and I couldn't find three different places to eat. That could have been my ordeal.
Yeah, it's so.
And then ate your leftover pizza.
Yeah, it's lame.
That could have been your ordeal.
It could have been you ate the crust.
There was no world I was going to give you that crust. There was cheese on it.
Damn it.
We both had our ordeals. It's just such a, like, the concept is, it's not my favorite concept in this book.
Yeah, if I had to pick the weakest link, the ordeal would be among the top contenders.
Yeah.
It's kind of a throwaway.
Yes.
So as Bryce enters her ordeal in chapter 79, and she starts to swim into the tank to save Syrinx, she thinks, quote, she would not accept this, not for a moment. This is so different from the complacency we saw earlier in this episode from Hunt and Rune. And honestly, it's different from the complacency we've seen from Bryce earlier in this novel. It might have been once upon a time that Bryce felt like things would not change. But now that she is armed with this information that Mike has been orchestrating these things that have caused her friend's death, that's caused her friend to be sold back to his previous owner who tortures him. So many people in her life have become victims that she is compelled to fight back.
Yeah. Throughout this whole book, I talk about Bryce using the feminine as a weapon or weaponizing the feminine and just sex as a weapon. All of that to say is that here she goes full weapon.
Mm-hmm.
This is Bryce in the tank with the knock. Quote, she punched her right hand low into the knock's abdomen and dug inside the nearly invisible front fold. It happened so fast, Hunt wasn't sure what she'd done. Until she twisted her wrist and the knock arched in pain, bubbles leaked from Bryce's mouth as she wrenched its balls harder. Every male in the pit flinched. I love the idea that she had to go inside of him to get his balls because, like, you know, he's a fish. And I also love that every man in there flinched at that. It's like a great comedic moment. I personally would have liked her to rip them off.
I wanted her to, too. Honestly, this is another thing that I forgot happened. I could not remember how she got away from the knock. I wish she had ripped him off. If we also, though, think about the knock as metaphor for Micah, it reminds me of when Sandriel first came to the Comitium and Micah, to save face, asked Bryce out, and Bryce turned him down.
Yeah.
Has the same flavor happening. Yep.
I don't want to think about flavors thinking about knock balls.
In other ways, the knock continues to be like Micah. Quote, from the shadows of the... So this is before the whole balls thing. Quote, from the shadows of the rocks at the bottom, the knock burst forth. It was already smiling. The knock knew she'd come for Syrinx. It had been watching her in the library for weeks now. And it's just like Micah's been watching Bryce forever and can't anticipate how she will act.
Yep.
Now, what I appreciate about this sequence from a writing perspective is that SJM accounts for every injury to Bryce and helps us understand the impact of the synth in her system and how it's healing or not healing her in time. And it doesn't feel convenient because more often than not, it's not healing her quick enough.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with when it does get healed, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because even when it's healed, she can't stand.
Yeah.
Even when it's healed, it's not like she's sprinting up the stairs with Syrinx in her. Like, it's just enough to not kill her.
Right.
Essentially.
Right.
And
which is convenient, but I'm okay with it.
Exactly. Where it makes the survival harder.
Mm-hmm.
And not like the fact that she was thrown across the room into a table and walked away with her bone being revealed. I mean, how many times have we seen someone being thrown into a table and they get up?
Yeah. And there's maybe they have a little scratch on their forehead.
Right. Like it definitely was like, oh, so that's an accurate depiction.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like, I'm willing to go along with it because you're giving me accurate depictions of these other action sequences.
Right. Or if nothing else, she's struggling.
She's struggling for sure. So the description of all of this is really great. And I just kind of want to pause and applaud SJM after, you know, we go back and forth with her. But I do want to applaud SJM for this because I feel like you can tell she's has 10 books under her belt at this point
mm-hmm.
in her writing because I'm very clear of what is happening.
Yeah.
And the descriptions are there. They're brief. Like we're not spending too much time at any given point. It's going, the adrenaline's high, and mm-hmm. yet I'm immersed. So, yep. And that takes a lot of skill.
Yep, I agree. When Bryce tries to resuscitate Syrinx, because at this point she's got him out, she's mm-hmm. gotten away from the knock, quote, she didn't speak, didn't beg any of the gods as she tried to resuscitate him. And I wanted to pause at this moment because I had to remember Bryce hasn't prayed to any gods since Danica's death.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's especially important because we've heard her, you know, think, oh, Kathona, like, yeah. I hope this doesn't happen or whatever the case is. She's not praying to the gods because if, remember how Micah was just like a zealot and was like, the gods are on my side. If that's true, she doesn't want to pray to those gods.
No. Right?
They're not going to help her.
Yeah.
So I liked that we get that reoccurrence of mm-hmm. that like lack of connection to religion for her.
Yeah, I also like the parallel with her and Micah with it, you know, where Micah is drawing from what he believes is his God-given right while Bryce is solely mm-hmm. focused on her friend, which is what you're gonna find actual strength in.
Right. Yeah. Great point.
Once again, the Autumn King is invested in Bryce surviving because at this point Micah is locked in the bathroom. He's trying to get out. Bryce's leg is injured. And he tells the screen, even though Bryce can't hear him, to leave Syrinx. Like, and just think about like that kind of emotional moment where he's just sitting there being like, leave the Chimera behind. Mm-hmm. Leave it behind. He's not saying that to anyone else. He's saying that to her.
Yeah.
Also, this other quote, Hunt knew, even before Bryce took another step, that she would not leave Syrinx. That she'd rather have her back peeled off by the Archangel than leave Syrinx behind. And he could see that Lahaba knew it too. Yeah. Yeah.
Why would the Autumn King be so invested if he did not care about Bryce? And the answer is he cares about Bryce.
Yes.
And it's obvious to all of us. And it is confusing how cruel he can be as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is where I wish, following this and leading into future books, I wish he had reached out more. But it also makes sense knowing that Bryce gets her powers and how maybe he feels threatened by that as well.
I mean, I can't wait for us to do book two because I think that's going to be the big one where he should have shown more cruelty.
Mm-hmm.
Because at this point, I'm still on my he cares about Bryce
yeah.
train.
Yeah.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
We then get to the most heartbreaking scene in the entire Crescent City series, in my opinion. I have cried every time I've read it.
Yeah.
And I almost didn't cry during notes. And then I did eventually.
I was literally sobbing. And Amy, I want you to say this quote from Lahaba. Go ahead and read it.
My friends are with me and I am not afraid.
Yeah. It's so sad.
It is very sad.
So,
I can see you tearing up.
I am. My friends are with me and I am not afraid. Okay, go ahead. I refuse to be a part of this conversation.
So what what is sad about this? So La Haba chooses to sacrifice herself to save Bryce and Syrinx, even after Bryce tells La Haba she's free. And I really wanted to dig in and be like, okay, logically understand. So why does it still make me cry every time? So if we think back on the entire novel, there have been plenty of moments where La Haba's been like, why don't you buy my freedom? And it's ironic that Bryce waited this long.
Mm-hmm.
It's annoying, but it's also a huge payoff that Bryce did actually end up buying La Haba's freedom. I can tell I was ranting in my notes because I was like, it took Hunt's imprisonment and the Sale to Sandriel for Bryce to wake up and realize she could help La Haba. Too late. Bryce tells La Haba, and this is what typically makes me cry. You are a free person. You don't have to do this. You are free, La Haba. And La Haba responds, then let the world know that my first act of freedom was to help my friends.
No, no, it's happening.
Jack is crying. I teared up while typing.
It's so sad. Literally my notes are, I can't do this.
Yeah, I saw.
So I'm just going to let you keep going.
And Bryce has to make a choice. And I think Bryce makes the choice that she does because she understands, just like La Haba understands, the outcome is A, they all die, or B, only La Haba dies. And Bryce chooses to let La Haba die because Syrinx isn't capable of making a choice right now. He's not capable of saving himself. And so Bryce chooses to save the helpless, while La Haba chooses to allow them to be saved.
Yeah.
I feel like this moment is a metaphor for Bryce's moving on from Danica. Bryce, in this whole sequence, and I think since Hunt's betrayal, has made the choice to let Danica go because that was what was holding her back. And it's allowing Bryce to move forward, embrace her future, and eventually embrace Hunt as part of her future.
I agree with you.
Thank you for agreeing with me through your sniffles. Okay, in my note, I say, I really, really cried when rereading the next scene for notes. I love that SJM has already established Hunt's point of view earlier on for a few chapters because he's able to watch what happens to La Haba without Bryce being present. And it would have felt a little cheap for this to be the only time we get Hunt's point of view watching through the cameras.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's been happening up until now, it's a huge payoff. La Haba attempts to destroy the Nock tank to slow Micah down.
Okay, you're doing great, sweetie. Can you please confirm that I am crying?
She's full on crying. It's take a picture. We'll have to post it on Instagram. Isn't this the same thing you cried about that I posted on Instagram?
Oh.
Remember that time we were at your mom's house and you were crying and I posted on Instagram about it?
It was a different thing I cried about.
Oh, okay. Hunt honors La Haba by saluting her. Eventually, the 33rd Legion and then everyone else in the conference room does the same except Sandriel. And I have to pause and ask, does that include the Autumn King and Sabine as well?
Yes.
They're not called out.
No, but he said everyone.
Hunt has a limited, can't literally see everyone, but okay. I will choose to accept that the Autumn King and Sabine also paid their respects. This next quote is especially meaningful because we have to remember literally at the start of the book, before the story even begins, we are told the sprites were removed from the House of Sky and Breath for being involved in the rebellion and therefore were made lowers. Quote, one by one, the angels in the 33rd rose to their feet, then Rune and his friends, and they too put their hands on their hearts as the smallest of their house pushed and pushed against the glass wall, burning gold as the Nock tried to flee. They all stood and bore witness to the sprite who brought her death down upon herself to save her friends. It was all they could offer her, this final respect and honor.
I'm going into my hood. I don't want to be a part of this podcast anymore. So much pain. It sucks so much because there is just the smallest little fighters. And they tried so hard.
They did.
And she threw herself against the
She knew she could kill the Nock and slow down Micah.
Yeah.
But only by killing herself in the process.
And everyone stood up for her, Amy.
Yeah.
Everyone
and paid their respects because they were like, you know what? We're behind you, too. We're behind you, too. I have no tissues in here. I have one more point to make.
Okay.
And I want to point out that just before she dies, before she breaks the glass, she turns gold because Lahaba is the true example of goodness.
I forgot about that. I stopped reading.
Okay, I will pause and go use some tissues.
That was so sad. Okay. And now we're going to enter breadcrumbs.
if she can breathe, she'll read breadcrumbs.
We're gonna do some breadcrumbs. We're gonna start with non-multiverse breadcrumbs. Go ahead, Amy.
In chapter 73, quote, the governors swept up the stairs, their wings nearly touching. Why the two of them hadn't become a mated pair was beyond Hunt. It wouldn't have been unusual. Sandriel and Shahar had been the result of such a union, though perhaps the fact that Sandriel had likely killed her own parents to seize power for her and her sister had made the Asteri put a halt to the practice. Yet somehow they decide to pick it up again once Sandriel's dead.
Also in chapter 73, when Hunt is looking at the Asteri on the screen in the conference room of the summit, quote, it was as if the entire existence were but a mayfly, his power but a wisp of the breeze in the face of their hurricane, as if he'd been hurled into deep space. Flame and shadow, that is all.
You don't need to know anything else.
Yep.
Still in chapter 73, when the Asteri mention Hypaxia's mother's passing, quote, Jessica's face revealed nothing, not even a hint of sorrow or anger for the heritage she'd walked away from. Because she's not really a witch.
Yeah. In chapter 75, Therian speaks directly to Sandriel during the summit in a way that makes Rune think, quote, bold male to say that, to look Sandriel dead in the eye. Too bad that boldness is really foolishness that we see over and over and over again.
Still in chapter 75, Therian and Hypaxia are interacting at the summit, quote, the mayor, male, gave her a slight secret smile, a gratitude and acknowledgement. The witch queen nodded back, barely a dip of her chin. They are secret besties, and we find out why in Crescent City 2.
Mm-hmm. In chapter 76, when Micah is talking about the library under the gallery, quote, Jespa said nothing, absolutely nothing. Her gray eyes promised cold death, though, this is the great library of Parthos. Jespa refused so much as open her mouth. 100,000 humans marched that day knowing they would die and lose the war, all to buy the priestesses time to grab the most vital volumes. They loaded them onto their ships and vanished. I'm curious to learn how they landed with Jessica Roga, because they were with her the whole time. Later, Jespa will say to Rune, quote, tell the ox to move the fucking asses. Save those books, I beg you.
Just a little more of just like...
They mean a lot.
They mean a lot. I wonder why.
Yep.
In chapter 77, Micah talks about about the tattoo and the horn in Bryce's back. Quote, it spells out a direct command to activate the horn through a blast of raw power upon the tattoo itself, just as it once did for the Starborn Prince. You may not possess his gifts like your brother, but I believe your bloodline and the synth shall compensate for it. There are so many breadcrumbs here, not only that Bryce will become a power siphon because of the horn, but also the fact that she indeed has Starborn gifts.
Before I read the next one, I just realized, I think because the third book hadn't come out when we were analyzing the first half of this, but I think early on, Bryce says something like, I'm never going to leave. Like, I'm trapped here forever.
Mm-hmm.
She literally is never going to leave it because she's gifted all the books.
Oh, such a good point.
She never really leaves.
Yep, you're right.
Yeah, yeah. In chapter 77, Hunt says to Rune, mind to mind, your starborn connection to her and the horn must have overcome even the masking power of the Arkesian amulet. That's quite a bond, Prince. Are we getting another clue that Bryce is starborn because of her neck connection to Rune?
It felt like it, even though Hunt was just trying to be nice to Rune.
I think it was a pity compliment.
It was. Now let's get into this, a few multiverse thoughts and breadcrumbs, and quite frankly, sirens, in my opinion.
The sirens that are outside currently?
No. Like, these are sirens for, like, multiverse. Oh, it's
gotcha.
Obvious.
Gotcha.
In chapter 73, when Rune reveals to Hunt he can speak mind to mind, quote, a gift from my mother's kin, one I've kept quiet. Mother's kin, who are related to Reese's kin.
Mm-hmm. In chapter 77, the language of the tattoo, horn on Bryce's back, is the language of universes, according to Micah. A not-so-subtle clue about the multiverse.
Another clue about the multiverse? In chapter 77, Micah tells Hunt he wants the horn because, quote, ancient lore whispers of other worlds that exist that would bow to a power like mine and bow to the horn. Dun, 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 multiverse. Dun, dun, dun.
And finally, in chapter 78, when Bryce is on the ground in the library, she tries to touch some of the books to assist her on the divine number, the walking dead, the book of breathings, the queen of many faces. There's a multiverse confirmation there. The queen of many faces, is that supposed to be Aelin?
I think it's Aelin.
I think it is, too.
Because if we think about it, her descendants are in this world.
Yep, yep.
So they must have written a biography about her. But the Book of Breathings.
That's our Book of Breathings.
That's the ACOTAR Book of Breathings there.
She didn't even try.
To hide. None of us fucking... No, she did not try to hide. And none of us really paid attention.
No. The funny thing is we did pay attention to say, wow, you're really duplicating this.
Yeah.
You're not trying hard enough.
That is very true.
And now for this week's Bryceism. Also, I found out that some of you guys have been keeping track of the Bryceisms, which I'm thankful for because I have not. And it's really sweet because I'm happy to hear that these Bryceisms have helped people. So may this one also help. It's never too late to tell your friends you love them, but would it have been better if you had told them before they died? Like
that. Just, I tell you I love you on a regular basis. And when are you dying?
We don't know. That's the whole thing. That's the whole thing is you never know when someone you love dies. So always tell them that you love them.
Don't be afraid to communicate.
I love you, Amy.
I love you, Jack.
Thank you for getting me tissues.
We literally hug each other every time we see each other.
Yeah, it's true. And then when I see you hug another one of our friends.
Do you get jealous?
No. It just makes him uncomfortable. I'm talking about Randall.
Oh,
when you came over and hugged Randall.
Yeah.
It makes him uncomfortable.
Yeah.
To hug anyone. So I'm like, ooh, me too.
Yeah, I saw you go right up for it.
Yeah, no. It's not a jealousy thing. It's totally going to make you feel weird thing. I just believe in breaking people who don't believe in physical touch.
And I believe in laughing at people when they cry.
Wait a minute.
I don't really.
I know. I know. Says the woman who said, okay, now let me take a quick photo so we can post it on Instagram. Out of all the times you've seen me cry, you've only laughed at like 0.01%.
Right. I was going to say, it's only been this time and one
and
other
last
time.
And the time before that.
No. I would say two times.
Yeah. And both were podcast related.
Yeah. They were both podcast related.
Yeah.
So now I have a question, Jack.
Yes.
Why is this section still the most impactful section in all of the Crescent City series?
Other than the obvious of losing Lahaba, which is the most traumatic death, I think it's the dance between hopelessness and hope. Mm. And I say that because we start off with everyone absolutely hopeless, right? But then Bryce kind of brings a little bit of hope. Everyone's finding out the truth. We're, oh my God, everyone now knows that Micah is the bad guy. Mm-hmm. Oh shit, now Syrinx is in trouble. Now Bryce managed to get it. It's like our emotions are all over. And even at the end of this section where Lahaba died, and we totally kept our chill and cool with that. But even at that, you're still experiencing hope because Bryce gets out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just the most human part
where
I think that humanity dances with this idea of hope and hopelessness.
Okay.
Do you have a different answer?
No, I really like your answer. Where I'm caught up and why I always cry at this section is because no one deserves Lahaba's goodness.
Yeah.
The only times that I've cried in this series are when someone sacrifices their life.
Yeah.
But this one is way, way more, like, stays with me mm-hmm. way, way more. Because Lahaba was never treated right. Even by Bryce.
Even by Bryce. Even Bryce says that Lahaba was the only one who stayed around, even in her darkest days.
Yeah.
Lahaba was still bright, kind, optimistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lahaba, like, knows her worth and doesn't allow anyone else's shittiness
yep.
to bring her down. Honestly, Syrinx could have died. Lahaba and Bryce should have gotten out. And it's because Lahaba is so good.
Yeah.
She shouldn't have had to do that for Bryce. Bryce didn't necessarily deserve it. But Lahaba, yep. Lahaba's love is unconditional.
Yeah.
And so her sacrifice is not self-serving.
No.
And I think the fact that she is honored the way that she is by so many people
mm-hmm.
is really, really impactful because she hasn't been taken seriously.
Yep.
And in the moment that matters most,
she's taken seriously.
She's taken seriously. And that's a huge moment for Lahaba. And she doesn't even get to know about it.
I know. And she's also been so proud of her origins,
mm-hmm.
and she's so proud to be a part of the people who fought with Hunt. Mm-hmm. You know, like, she's not even yeah. resentful. I don't want to say she's not resentful, but, like, she's not resentful about being a slave the same way that others are, because mm-hmm. there's a certain amount of, like, my ancestors did what was right.
Yeah.
We are proud to have fought with the angels. And she takes that to the grave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She does.
And she just takes it all the way through. And yeah. And I think the fact that Bryce doesn't deserve her goodness makes it better.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it
absolutely.
Makes it like, and it, how it should be. Like, you know, but Bryce does carry Lahaba's death with her.
Yeah.
And I think that that's one that is a good example of, like, what happens, like, impacted her. Like, I think Bryce needed to have two friends die in this.
Mm-hmm.
Danica died. Bryce needed another friend to die to bookend it.
Yeah.
And to realize that when Danica died, Bryce lost her life in many ways mm-hmm. with her. When Lahaba died, she's realizing it would be such a waste for me to have to go into a zombie mode like she did with Danica.
Yeah.
Because the people that love you who pass want you to live.
Right.
They want you to have a life and to be fun. Like, if anyone loves you and they die, like, they don't want you to be in pain.
Right. Exactly. They want you to live and have a full life.
Yeah.
I also feel I love the point that the two deaths bookend.
Yeah.
Bryce's experience, and it takes Lahaba's death for Bryce to really be propelled into her future.
Yep.
I also think this is the only time or only one of a very, very few times SJM has done death correctly.
Agreed. This is how it should do. Like, it should do. This is how it should hurt. It should rip me apart. I should be sobbing as we talk about this.
Yeah. And I want to feel that pain because I'm a masochist, apparently. Yep. But, you know, it wasn't a main character, but it was a character who was there throughout everything, who really supported the main character.
Who meant a lot.
And dies. Like, we need more of that in novels.
Yeah. And I think SJM, you know, it made me hopeful for the deaths in this series because she killed off two big ones.
Yeah.
And I think she got a little gun shy.
Gun shy afterwards. Yeah.
And it's, you know, sometimes you have to kill your darlings.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think that sometimes it's hard because I don't like it when particularly female deaths in books, and you see this a lot with characters who are women of color,
mm-hmm.
that their death propels oftentimes male characters.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what was done here.
No.
It was done chef's kiss perfect way.
Yeah.
Jess Jam's capable. We should have killed Fury.
And we should have killed more than Fury. We should have killed Ember.
Agreed.
Ember should have died.
We should have let Randall live to make it hurt more.
Yeah, yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
What SJM did the best, other than, like, I love Hunt and Bryce's relationship in this novel, what SJM did best was she killed the best friend in the first 7 chapters, mm-hmm. and she killed the only person who supported Bryce afterward
yeah.
in the last 10 chapters,
yep.
20 chapters, whatever it is.
A friend that Bryce did not appreciate.
Yeah.
Yeah. At all.
Chef's kiss.
Chef's kiss. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Book Talk for Book Talk. We encourage you to rate and subscribe to our show on your preferred podcast listening platform. Next week, we'll be exploring chapters 80 through 89 of A House in Earth and Blood.
We would love to hear your thoughts based on today's conversation. You can submit your comments to our form at booktalkforbooktalk.com for a chance to have your feedback discussed during a future mini episode.
If you're enjoying the podcast, please visit our website, booktalkforbooktalk.com, to view our latest merch and learn about supporting the show through Patreon, Ko-Fi, or Venmo. You can also follow us on TikTok or Instagram at the handle booktalkforbooktalk.
Bye! So, I didn't say this on the podcast because it's too spoilery,
mm-hmm.
but this is equivalent to the 13. Sacrificing themselves so Manon could live.
Oh my god, yes it is.
It's the genuinely, and then like Jessica dying so that Bryce could live. Like,
yeah.
But even
that one doesn't hurt as
much. That one
much.
Doesn't hurt the way the 13.
Yeah.
And the way that.
Because it should feel more pointless.
Yeah.
It should be more stupid.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I agree. The 13 and the in La Haba, those are the perfect deaths that she's done.
How many books has she written?
Too many to have only done death Two. Right correctly only twice.
Yeah. Can I drink
absolutely. Water? Let's all drink water.
Let's hydrate, ladies.
Jack, who's editing, you should drink some water too.
Thanks for the reminder, Jack, who's here recording.
Yeah. Future Jack didn't say thank you at all. Bitch. Thanks, Amy, for thanking me in her place.
Yeah, you're welcome.
God.
Future Jack, you should know better. I don't know where they are. Let me go find them.
If this is a good time to take a photo, I understand.
It is a good time yeah. to take a photo. Let me. You can pose with the tissues.
Oh my god. You should have seen me when I read it. I walked out from to Nicole. Uh-huh. And I was like, I didn't have a good time. I didn't have fun reading this.
When I was taking notes, I started like silently crying. And I just kept, because Emma was sitting next to me, and I just kept wiping. And I was like, I hope she doesn't see.
I was gasping. Like, as I was reading, I was like...
Usually, I sob till I hyperventilate when I read this.
Yeah, yeah. No, we're there.